Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Jake Sheba. Jake is a founder and a director at Synthesis. It's Jake on Chai. We speak to him every alternate Friday. And this morning we wanted to talk about something called Loser Think. Jake, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Yeah, so this is a topic that I'm actually quite passionate about. And I think we all know that, like, one of our problems – now, one of the problems I suppose we've had in the past is access to information. Right. And then, you know, with the invention of the internet, the World Wide Web, and then computers and cell phones and smartphones to access this information, I think we can well and truly say we've solved that problem. We've solved access to information. But we've actually gone and introduced a whole new problem. Right. And the new problem, in the prophetic words of T.S. Eliot, are where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? And where is the knowledge we have lost in information?
Oh, I love that. And, yeah, amazing.
And if, I mean, if you think of the corona crisis, I mean, there's no shortage of information.
Yeah, but there's a tremendous shortage of wisdom. That's missing.
Exactly. So our challenge is to know, to parse out, like, what is the information we need? And then, like, what is the wisdom that tells us what to do? And I suppose we can thank yourself and Dr. Marburg for trying to muddle through that for us. But really it is a problem. And I think it's a problem that's been compounded by the fact that journalism, which used to be about facts, in the last decade has turned into opinion. So it actually makes it even more difficult.
Yeah, and we've moved much further away from factual reporting and much more onto, we've spoken about this a lot, either biased reporting, reporting that leaves out stories that we're just not happy with or we're not comfortable because it doesn't fit our agenda or prove the narrative that that we've decided on. So it does become very difficult. But we do it in our own brains as well, don't we?
Sure. And it's one of the reasons I actually love somebody called Scott Adams, and he's the author of the Dilbert comic strip. And in addition to the Dilbert comic strips, he's actually a hypnotist. He's an entrepreneur. He's the author of six other non-Dilbert books, and he's actually a political commentator as well. So he was one of the first political commentators to correctly predict that Trump in 2015 was going to win the Republican nomination and win the election. And it was because he just has a profound way of actually analyzing the world, which is really, really insightful. And his most recent book that he published is a book called Loser Think. And really the goal of the book is to provide people with the cognitive tools we need to solve this information, knowledge, wisdom problem that we're faced with. He starts off saying, well, what is the best way of telling people that they're wrong? And he admits that obviously it's not particularly helpful to say to people, well, you're an ignorant idiot or you're stupid. And I suppose the reason is it's pretty obvious. You're playing the man and not the ball. In fact, like, if somebody resorts to calling you names, it normally means you've won the argument. But it also means that the discussion's come to an end as well. I think that's also part of the problem with the political debate. But he admits as well, and he points out that mockery and ridicule is a powerful tool. And in fact, his Dilbert comic strip, which really is famous for poking fun at bad management practices, is based on that. It's a satire, and it uses mockery and ridicule very effectively to point out stupid things in the workplace. So in fact, Elon Musk, he referred to Dilbert in his productivity rules for Tesla. And rule number six, he says, in general, always pick common sense as your guide. If following a company rule is obviously ridiculous in a particular fashion, such that it would make for a great Dilbert cartoon, then the rule should change. which I think it just shows the power of using ridicule and sarcasm to actually change people's minds. But instead of telling somebody then that, like, they're using a bad thinking technique or sloppy thinking, tell them that they're using loser think. Because it's got the mocking, it's got the ridicule, but you're not mocking the person. You're actually making fun of their bad thinking. And then you get a chance to maybe explain why it is that they're thinking incorrectly. And the discussion then can continue. You're not shutting down the discussion.
Right. So what is loser think?
So what it is it's basically saying, look at a whole bunch of professions out there, and then basically take nuggets of information from those professions and adapt them and use them in your everyday life. So, for example, I studied electrical engineering at university, but I've never worked in a job that people would typically say, oh, that's, you know, would it be associated with electrical engineering. And so I would say the most powerful use of my degree is that it taught me to think like an engineer. So it's how to think about and then solve complex real-world problems. And these are skills I do use every day. So another example could be like an economist. So economist is taught about the concept of a sunk cost. Because we often like make bad decisions by like throwing good money after bad. And once you know that people make bad investment decisions because maybe they've gone and done a first tranche of investment in a company and they've now got this emotional connection, they basically make a poor judgment decision and invest again without realizing that there's this concept called sunk cost. And as soon as you're told about it, it's then obvious. So it's really trying to say, well, how do we take these different insights and thinking techniques from all these different professions, and then how do we adapt them and use them in our everyday lives? And I think what LoserThink does is he goes through a whole bunch of different professions and he takes out nuggets of insights of this is how, let's say, an artist thinks. This is how a psychologist thinks, or a historian will look at it, and an engineer will look at it this way, and a leader will look at it this way, and a scientist will look at it this way. And if you actually start going through all of those things and say, all right, what are those different approaches? Ah, there's a sunk cost concept, or there's some other concept.
So interesting.
We can adopt that. Yeah.
Because what I find quite annoying, actually, is there's this trend of books that are, it's actually around this theme, but it actually so limiting, because it'll be, for example, you know, how I applied my time in the Marines to business and why it worked. Now that's great, because I'm sure the aspects of it that do work, and then but then the next book is about how being an NFL player helped me in business, as though one of these disciplines presents all of the answers. And of course it doesn't. And that's exactly what you're saying is you can actually look at things from different perspectives rather than trying to limit yourself to one box.
Sure. And it's actually, we don't have to send ourselves to universities for the rest of our life. To become an engineer and a scientist and a this and a that. We can actually just almost just peruse or just like take a 10,000 foot view of what these different professions teach us, and we can pull out those nuggets and then use those. And but as you correctly pointed out, across the whole gamut of stuff, not just one area. So I thought what would be quite cool today is just to look at one of the areas.
Great.
Like in honor of my mom, who's an artist, and she's been a role model for me. So I thought let's start by looking at what artists can teach us about how to think.
Brilliant.
And the first thing it can teach us is the dangers of the failure of imagination. So it's like we always taught that we must judge other people favorably. And one reason of this, because we don't know the reason for why people act the way they do. So artists, what they learn to do is they learn to tap into their creativity and their imagination. And by definition, you could think that a creative concept is something that's actually not yet been imagined before. And therefore, the best artists will try to see the world from new perspectives, and they'll try and think of novel uses for everyday objects. So we can benefit from this way of thinking. And the way we do that is that we can recognize that the most likely explanation of why somebody often does something is something that you could never imagine. So for example, you could say, well, what is Jake's main reason for speaking on radio? And like, let's try and think of a reason for that. And I don't think many people would guess that my main reason is because I want to overcome my lifelong fear of speaking in public. You know, it's something that's a bit out there, but if you don't have a really good imagination, you're not going to think that's the reason. And similarly, in other situations, we often like can't tell the difference between genius and stupidity. So, and often the only difference is a failure of us to be able to imagine the difference. So if we take, for example, the concept of square watermelons, growing square watermelons, and it sounds ridiculous just because we can't imagine it, just never seen it. But in Japan, that's exactly what they're doing, and it just makes transporting watermelons easier, storing them, you know, just cutting them, everything is a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because you're not limited by what you see. Because in an artist's exactly. mind, anything can be anything.
Yeah, and just realizing that let's use our power of imagination. Because our imagination, in other words, imagine what else could it be that you know, or just admit that my imagination is not the imagination of an artist, and therefore maybe I don't know the reason why so and so didn't greet me that day, and therefore could have a grudge against them. So realize that we do suffer from a failure of imagination, and just bring that into our thinking. And then the next area where I think artists are fantastic is they tap into their intuition. And they do this by being in touch with their emotions, and they don't like go about judging or squashing their emotions. They're just like really in touch with it. They're present with their emotions. And our mind is a lot like an iceberg, where like the conscious part of our mind is like just right at the tip. It's the part that's outside of the water. While our unconscious part of the mind is that vast, amount of the iceberg that's under the water. And the only way that we become like, we can tap into this unconscious is becoming more aware of our emotional state and our gut feelings. And, you know, meditation and mindfulness is all about trying to increase our ability to tap into this vast and powerful unconscious potential that's within us. And when we tap into this intuition, we gain a sense of understanding of the world that we don't necessarily know consciously about the world. So for me, this is a whole area.
Yeah,
it's an area where, you know, you have all the
because as an engineer, biases. That's the furthest thing that you would ever be able to rely on. You need to be able to see it and prove it through rational thinking or logic. Whereas an artist actually relies on the stuff that is beneath the surface that you can't really see or prove.
And that's exactly it. And I think there's so much value in that intuition and those gut feelings that we can't explain. It's not logical. We can't define a reason for why we feel that way, but there's a wisdom. And I think like if something doesn't seem like sensible, well, maybe it isn't, you know, even if you can't explain why it's not sensible. And then I think the other thing that artists do, which is amazing, is they learn to embrace mistakes. And none of us like really enjoy making mistakes. I mean, embarrassed by our mistakes, and then we want to distance ourselves from them. But artists actually know that their so-called mistakes that they make their works of art more incredible than they could have even expected. Like it elevates their art because it makes it more unique and it gives it a human touch and it makes their piece of art stand out.
Because perfection is not an aspiration, actually.
Exactly. Well, maybe perfection
in the form, in the style, yeah, but, in the talent, but not necessarily in a depiction. I mean, we've seen that with art, how the photo, you know, how it went through this whole change around the time that photographs were starting to become more popular.
That's exactly it. Because it's now realism, or like when you're trying to use art to capture a scene. That, like, yes, photography did that really well. Right. We don't need an artist to do that.
And comes along the impressionists, and they look at the world completely differently because they've already got things that were depicting the world as is. So, very interesting there.
But I'm saying, so the aspect of embracing mistakes or realizing that we're human, which an artist does so well, is something that we can adopt and we can adapt to, because we can admit that when we make mistakes, and that we do make mistakes, and then we all of a sudden open to learn. Because when you have the humility to admit, listen, I've made a mistake, then I've done something wrong, then this concept of humility is essential for the learning process. Because if you never made a mistake, there's nothing to learn. And then by extension, thinking clearly is also part of this. So again, this whole concept of embracing our humanity and the fact that we do make mistakes, and then the humility and the that comes with it, and then we can learn and think more clearly. And then another area that artists are brilliant at is that they realize that you can't please everybody. You know, so you effectively not every single piece of art that you produce is going to appeal to everybody who encounters it.
Welcome to
the world. And it's for this, so it's this very reason, like we've got multiple genres of music, and many schools of art, as you've pointed out. Now, we're just trying to push those boundaries. We're just trying to understand. But recognizing that not everything is going to please everybody. And in the same way in our life, making decisions is hard because the chances are whatever decision we get make, it's going to upset somebody. And even not making a decision is going to upset people as well.
Absolutely.
So I think what an artist does when they realize that is they say, all right, what I need to do is let me be authentic and true to my art. So the same way ourselves, we need to have integrity and courage to make the hard decisions that are in line with our goals and our principles. And I think if we can do that and not worry so much about what are people going to think about me, what are they going to say, etc. Realize that you're not going to please everybody, but understand what your principles are, understand what your values are, and actually make your decisions on the basis of that. Speak your truth without squashing it. And I think that's something that artists teach us to do, which is really amazing.
The other thing I think that, as you were speaking, I was thinking about one of the things that Jordan Peterson says that I thought was very valuable and profound was he also speaks about artists in the broad sense, talking about whether it's a writer, musician, a painter, no matter what, creates order out of chaos. And artists live in this ambivalent world or in the dual worlds of order and chaos, by taking these random musical notes and fashioning it into a piece of music, or taking words that just exist out there and pulling them into a piece, paint the same thing. So to some extent, what an artist does is creates order out of chaos, but in fact lives a little bit more comfortably in the world of chaos because those are the tools than other people perhaps.
And that is spot on. That is exactly right. So you can think of our artists from a societal point of view being those explorers of society. And they actually, by exploring the uncharted world of our vast human potential, they take tremendous risks, but they move society forward and they play a tremendously useful role. In being comfortable in chaos, as Jordan Peterson puts it, because what they're doing is they're saying, well, there's so much potential out there, and some of it's dangerous, and some of it's really amazing, but you won't know unless you explore. And that's why, so our explorers are our artists. I think when we start thinking like an artist, we then start tapping into the spirit of discovery and adventure and wonder of the world, and really embracing everything that it has to offer and all its potential. So I really want to encourage people to, start thinking like an artist, because I think it gives us a lot more, and it can enrich our lives tremendously.
Absolutely amazing. Jake Shepherd, founder and director at Synthesis. Thank you as always, talking to us about Loserfink. Very interesting concept indeed.